Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome to All Points North, the Yle News podcast that aims to deliver your weekend labor insights on time. This week we'll discuss whether workers' rights are under siege as firms try to maximize profits and as government looks for new ways to boost business activity. Our guest is Ville Veikko-Pulkka, a Helsinki University researcher who specializes in labor and public policy in the digital economy.
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Points North, the Yle News podcast that aims to scratch and sniff all the surfaces of life in Finland. I'm Mark Odom, and sitting across from me is my co-host, Denise Wall. Good to see you, Denise.
Thanks, Mark. So we're scratching and sniffing nowadays, are we?
Well,
in any case, you know, this is starting to be one of my most favorite places in the world to be. So thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And also sitting in our studio is this week's special guest, Helsinki University labor and public policy researcher Ville Veikko-Pulkka. Welcome. Can we call you Ville?
You can decide. Both are fine.
Okay. Brilliant.
Well, your bio says that you're a social and public policy researcher, but it also says you're current interest is in how the digital economy will affect labor and public policy. I presume you've been digging into this field of study already. And what can you tell so far about how the platform economy is affecting work compared to, say, employment as our parents knew it?
Well, thus far, it is fair to know that we are still discussing a marginal phenomenon. According to Statistics Finland, only 0.3% of Finns have received 1/4 of their income from platforms. That was in 2017. So I think that emphasized it still it is a marginal phenomenon, but at the same time, it can be expected to grow. One good example is the purchase of TaskRabbit by IKEA last year, which shows that even conventional big enterprises are interested in organizing work on these new platforms.
TaskRabbit?
Yeah, it's a pioneering on-demand platform based in San Francisco, and it has been quite popular manner to organize many kind of work tasks in the U.S. and not only food delivery, which we are talking today.
Okay. Well, so is it a sort of a platform where employers can find willing employees to do certain kinds, specific tasks for them?
Exactly, exactly.
Small
so it's
projects.
An allocation of small projects and tasks. Mm.
Okay. Now, one of the things that we know about this kind of digital economy is that while it can offer a great deal of flexibility for workers in the sense that you don't have to be tied to an 8-to-4 job like our parents did, for example, it also has some risks. So we've heard a lot of talk recently about 0-hours contracts. Unions are concerned about erosion of benefits and so on. Is there a role for policymakers and their advisors like you to try and somehow legislate to protect workers' rights? So would that be seen as a constraint on business?
Well, I think one important thing to bear in mind is that if more work is organized as self-employment, it means that the poverty risk will increase for many workers. This we know already from statistics, that self-employment means higher poverty risk for a worker. So of course, when it comes to self-employment, I'm quite convinced that we need more regulation, and this is something that should be in the agenda in the coming years. One obvious way to tackle some of the problems is making social security more flexible for the self-employed, which means that maybe one could combine paid work and self-employment at the same time, and maybe we could tackle some of the pitfalls in the current system that in the worst case scenarios you may even fall through the gaps in the system, which means that you may not even be eligible for social security if you're self-employed.
We've seen recently the government insist that it's forging ahead with legislation that'll make it easier for small firms to fire workers. There have been some minor adjustments to the draft bill, but the essential provision remains the same. What unions see as a loss of protection from summary dismissal by employers. Is this part of a global pro-business trend that we can expect to see more measures that favor business but maybe jeopardize workers' rights?
Well, if we have a look at the bills that have been passed in the parliament since 2015, it is quite clear that this is continuation of similar labor market policies that have weakened workers' rights. I think everybody agrees that making it easier to hire employees in small enterprises, that's a good target. But then again, how effective is this dismissal reform that is now on the table? That's another question. If we follow labor market economics theory, we can expect two kinds of effects. First, we can expect dismissal rates to increase, but also we can expect hirings to increase. And we have also empirical evidence from other countries to confirm this theory. Of course, there are some methodological limitations, and comparison from one country to another are always open to various interpretations. But at the same time, one conclusion that can be drawn from these studies from other countries is that the net employment effect can be expected to be really insignificant. So as an employment measure, this dismissal reform cannot be described effective. And then again, I think at the end of the day, it's about politics. Do we want to make it a little bit easier for small enterprises to hire new workers and at the same time weaken workers' rights, or should we find maybe some more equal measures that would benefit both sides of the labor market?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question that we should be asking our politicians. But I've got a different perspective that I want to come at you from now. And one of the things that we've been talking about, certainly in our newsroom, is that it seems that there's now a kind of two-tier system for workers, where you have people with traditional contracts who are protected. They've got their pensions accumulating and they can look forward to their kissapäivät, as they say in Finland. And at the same time, there is a sort of a parallel stream of people with working on short-term contracts, working in the gig economy, for example, with much fewer protections. Is this something that's here to stay, do you think?
Well, the fact is that the permanent jobs are the normal, so precarious jobs are not the new normal, so to say. But at the same time, there have been some trends which indicate that the labor market has become more precarious than it used to be, let's say, 20 years ago. And according to my analysis, it is also obvious that digital economy will mean that the labor market becomes more precarious or fluctuating. So far it's too early to say what are the long-term effects. There are many implementation and restructuring lags in production when it comes to digital technologies and artificial intelligence. But given the technological possibilities and historical evidence, it is quite obvious that we should expect the labor market to change in the coming years.
Hmm. Coming years is like how long? 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20?
I'd prefer not to answer that question.
So that's like tomorrow. Okay, then.
So, yeah, we'll have to get ready real fast. And moving on, let's turn our attention now to one company operating in the digital economy, meal delivery firm Foodora. It's been in the headlines since the summer over what workers there are calling a unilateral decision to slash their pay.
That's right, Mark. Now, by way of a little bit of background, let me say that Foodora's parent company, Delivery Hero, is based in Germany. But the firm expanded its operations to many countries, including Finland. And it seems there's big money in the food delivery business, as that parent company was valued at around 4.5 billion euros after it listed on the stock exchange last summer. I should also point out that it currently employs about 6,000 people. Anyway, our erstwhile reporter and producer today, Zina Iovino, pulled together some more information on the recent tension between Foodora and its couriers here in Finland. So let's listen in.
Food delivery firms like Foodora may be catering to consumers' gastronomical whims and fancies, but it all comes at a price. Most of the cyclers and drivers who make the actual deliveries would say that they don't get a fair slice of the very profitable meal delivery pie. In general, they work for fairly low wages and are not unionized. That lack of representation created an opening for Foodora in Finland to announce in July that it was slashing couriers' weekday pay from 8 to 7 euros an hour, while their weekend pay would drop from 11 to 9 euros an hour. The company calculated that if workers could deliver 2.5 meals an hour, their wages would remain stable. In other words, they'd have to work a bit more to earn the same pay as before. On top of that, couriers who used their own vehicles for delivery would no longer be entitled to additional compensation. Apart from the dip in their wages, workers were irked by the unilateral nature of the new plan. There had been no consultation or negotiation, they said. They were given just 2 weeks to sign up to the new rules, or they could check out. At the same time, the company said it was raising delivery prices across the board by 10%. One courier said that the new contract would reduce his monthly paycheck by more than 150 euros. Last month, many of Foodora's delivery staff in Finland took a stand against the move and held public protests. They claimed they did not receive employment contracts or insurance from the company, and that they deliver food in heavy backpacks, sometimes while riding bicycles in all sorts of weather conditions for low wages.
And that was Zina on recent rumblings in one area of the digital economy, the app-driven food delivery sector. Now, Foodora has come to Finland with some baggage. For example, they pulled out of the Australian market in August after taking some heat from local unions and regulators over what they saw as sham contracts and underpayment of workers. When we consider companies like Foodora, not to mention Nuvo Taxi Service Uber and Finnish food delivery firm Volt, I guess the question for you, Ville, is Finland prepared for the digital platform economy?
I think we should point out two issues. First, we need more regulation, for sure. Foodora is an illustrative example how things can end up if there is a gray zone when we don't know if the workers are actually self-employed or employees. So this is something that should be decided politically in the coming years. Second, I think we should also think about how to reform social security to make it more flexible for people who are receiving income from different kind of gigs or short-term contracts. Mm-hmm. And I think these are two main issues that are politically the most important at the moment when it comes to platform economy.
Mm. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we ran a news story where a Uvascular University academic estimated that as many as 400,000 people working in that gig economy or on short-term contracts, as you just mentioned there, were considered working poor. And that means that they can't survive on their pay, on their paychecks, so they're drawing benefits to sort of supplement their incomes. Isn't that a form of government subsidy paid for by taxpayers, like all of us sitting here, for companies that don't want to pay workers a living wage?
Well, I think we are already having similar system that you can work on a part-time basis and receive social security. I think the question is if we want to make it more flexible and easier, reduce bureaucracy when one wants to work on a part-time basis or go into self-employment. Yes, of course, it's a subsidy, but this is not something new. It's not a new innovation that the similar systems can be found in many other countries as well.
Mm. It seems like there's very little visibility or oversight when it comes to how companies in non-unionized sectors are treating their employees. Is it really the case that companies are free to self-regulate in these cases?
Well, as mentioned, we need more regulation when it comes to platforms. Now, as we can see in many examples, not only Foodora but also Uber, that it's hard to define whether these people are employees or self-employed, and if we don't have accurate definitions, then it's hard to say which law should be followed when it comes to these people or what kind of social security reforms or what kind of social security is eligible.
These are questions still that need to be nailed down and
put
on paper.
Now, Ville, for nearly the past 2 years, as we were actually talking about a bit before we started the show, Finland has been carrying out a small-scale basic income experiment. About 2,000 unemployed residents in Finland were chosen at random, and they're receiving something like 560 euros a month in that trial. Now, the aim of the trial is to see how the kind of system would work in terms of activating people in the labor market, as opposed to the current regime that we're living with. The trial ends by the end of this year. And what I'm wondering is, do you think this is the kind of model that we're likely to see coming online, possibly in the digital economy, as it takes hold more firmly in Finland, one that will essentially patch holes in workers' pay as they take on part-time gigs?
It is quite clear that basic income would help self-employed people or people who work on a part-time basis, since it reduces the bureaucratic trap, which means that there are delays and reporting obligations, meeting obligations in the current system. But I think basic income is not the only solution. There are also some other possibilities between totally unconditional scheme and the current scheme. We could gradually reduce means and income testing, meaning that we could make it possible to study or start a business while claiming unemployment benefits, for instance. Mm-hmm. We could also revise many sanctions and obligations which the unemployed has at the moment in the current system. So there are many other methods as well. And I think at the moment, unfortunately, if we have a look at the policies implemented by the government, they are not going into the direction of flexible social security. There have been more obligations, well, most controversially, of course, active model, mm-hmm. which has increased bureaucracy for the unemployed substantially. There are also good reforms, such as making it possible to go into self-employment while claiming mm-hmm. unemployment benefits. Still, it's kind of a narrow approach when it comes to these reforms that have reduced bureaucracy. So we will see what will happen, and I think next year when Finland is implementing the so-called national income registry, it will for sure reduce some of these bureaucracy traps, since it makes easier to combine part-time job with social security with less delays. But then I think, in my view, it is not comprehensive enough alone, so we will need also other reforms.
Real quick, you mentioned Social Security needs looking at in this regard, and a big concern for workers in the gig economy is that when they're old enough to retire, they may not have paid in enough money to survive during their golden years. What should Finland do to adjust its pension schemes?
Well, I need to admit that the pensions are not my area of expertise, but the fact is that if we don't have stable employment development, our pension system will not be economically feasible. Mm-hmm. So we need to for sure either current the stable employment development or have cuts on the benefits in the future. And I think the first choice is better from these two.
Okay. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. Real quick. Mark said real quick. I'm going to say real quick. When are we likely to find out how successful the basic income experiment was?
The first results are expected to be published in late 2019, since tax information is lagging and we need this information to combine it with the basic income registry, which has information on the treatment group and their behavior during the experiment.
Okay, so end of next year at the earliest. Well, moving on, our show wouldn't be complete if we didn't include our audience. And this week, our Facebook friends were drawn to our reporting on the government's plans to push through legislation to make it easier for small firms to fire employees. Now, as we mentioned earlier, there's been some industrial unrest over the proposal, and the government has eased off some of the more draconian measures included in the plan.
That's right, Denise. So the threshold has been reduced from 20 to 10-person firms, and workers who are fired for some reason will face a 60-day loss of benefits instead of the originally proposed 90 days. Before we jump into the audience comments, Ville, the government says it wants to encourage firms to hire, but why punish workers? Any ideas?
Well, I think according to their analysis, they truly believe that it will have positive effect on employment. But as mentioned in the beginning of our discussion, both theory and evidence from other countries show that we should not expect any net employment effect, or at best insignificant effect. So in other words, if government wants to argue that this is good for small enterprises, that's fine, but they should not argue that this would have some kind of positive effect on employment.
Okay. Well, one of our followers on Facebook, Christopher, if you're listening, Chris, thank you for your comment. He said he didn't get this proposal alongside the current Finnish practice of summary dismissal within the usual four-month probation period, I think it is. And he says, so now they're going to make it even easier to fire someone? Now, Ville, to follow up on Christopher's question, do employers really need an additional firing tool when they can already fire a new worker during that probationary period?
I agree with our listener or potential listener that the employers already have measures to evaluate whether the new employee is suitable for the job. Mm-hmm. So I think this, of course, the change is not that drastic. That's also something that should be bear in mind. But at the same time, there are measures to evaluate employees, and I think the government should perhaps focus on more effective measures when it comes to employment or making easier for employers to hire new employees.
Do you mean a more of a carrot than a stick, or is that whole?
Well, maybe a carrot for employers, of course, thick for the employees, but at the same time, also from the perspective from employers, there may be a risk, or from the perspective of national economy, that it may constitute a barrier to growth of small enterprises. So even from the perspective of the enterprises, there are problems with this.
Getting back to our Facebook friends, Dominic said that it sounds like Finland needs a no-worker, worse-off system. He said, except in extraordinary circumstances, employees shouldn't have to earn less or put up with worse working conditions. And in response, Yasser said the term workers' rights is an oxymoron and people should just stop whining. Should people just accept the fact that worker protections will continue to just decrease, Ville?
Well, I think everybody can agree that that has been the trend in the Finnish labor market and in the labor markets of many other Western economies. This is, of course, politics. Finland's really unionized country, and I think unions will have lots of power also in the future, and I don't see there any drastic changes coming in the near future. But at the same time, as for instance the competitiveness pact shows, unions have been forced to make really big compromises in comparison to previous decades when it was mostly positive changes from the perspective of labor.
And just to point out that this competitiveness pact was something that the Sipilä administration pushed through pretty early in the administration. It did take about a year before it was settled, but one of the things that workers gave up was some of their vacation bonuses, and we all are supposed to work something like, is it 15 minutes longer each day?
So basically 24 hours more a year. Mm. And what makes this reform interesting is that trade unions have been a big reason why working hours have been shortened.
Yes.
since the last 200 years or so in the global economy, and this was the first time in Finland when the unions negotiated a deal which made the workers work more hours.
Exactly. So a landmark kind of a watershed moment for the trade union movement. But super, super quick, Ville, I'm just thinking that I'm wondering if this kind of measure may not come back to bite small firms, in the sense that isn't it possible that job seekers might then avoid looking for work at precisely these small firms because of the risk that it poses for them?
This is one plausible scenario, but of course this is speculative. We don't have any research on this, so I'd better not to give any exact answer for that.
Okay, I'll give you a pass on that
one. If you have something on your mind, send your comment or question to Yle News' Facebook or Twitter accounts, or email us at yle.news@yle.fi. You can also send us an audio or text message on WhatsApp. Our number is +358 44 421 0909. We'd like to hear what's on your mind.
And now it's time to take a look at the top three news stories our readers and listeners discussed and shared the most on social media this week.
First up, the government benefits agency Kela has cut basic income support payments by up to 200 euros for about 11,000 people this year so far. Currently, the basic social assistance, which is considered a last resort form of financial help, is about 490 euros each month. It's paid to households whose income is not enough to cover basic daily necessities. However, Kela has the right to reduce the amount by up to 40% if the recipient refuses to accept work or enroll in training or education.
Our audience also discussed a story we carried about religion, or the decline of it. One in four people in Finland do not belong to any registered religious community. According to Statistics Finland figures, 30% of men are unaffiliated with any religion, compared to 23% of women. The largest group of non-religious people are in their 30s, with some 40% not belonging to a registered religion.
And finally, last but not least, readers were also interested in a story about how a one-day strike by labor unions this week would affect services they use, such as public transportation and hospitals. Thousands of workers in the industrial, service, food and power sectors went on a 24-hour strike on Wednesday to protest that government bill that we talked about that would make it easier for small firms to hire, or fire, rather, employees.
It sounds like a great podcast.
It was a 2-4. Yeah, great, great idea for a podcast.
Yeah. It's almost time for us to call it a show, and the weekend is just moments away. But before we do go, we have to ask, what are your plans this weekend, Ville?
Well, tomorrow our band Them Wise Fools is having rehearsal. We are, by the way...
What's your band's name, I'm sorry?
Them Wise Fools.
Them Wise Fools.
And we are, by the way, publishing our debut EP next Friday, so stay tuned. All right. Will be available on Spotify.
Congratulations. Cool.
Thank you very much. And on Sunday, unfortunately, back to business, so I'm heading to Lithuania to give 2 speeches on basic income.
All right, so you're the global basic income expert.
Rock star, jet set.
Yeah, so rock and roll and research all weekend.
Well, sounds interesting and fun. What about you, Denise? What are you doing this weekend?
Well, it seems I'll be heading to Helsinki's Herring Festival this weekend, Mark and Ville, and it's beginning on Sunday, and people have told me that it's a popular festival that combines modern food culture with archipelago traditions. The thing I like about it is that it's free, unless I decide to pay for a hot sauna with total strangers. But enough about my plans. What have you got going on this weekend, Mark?
Thought you'd never ask. I'm excited because I'm headed downtown to take in the new and very hyped modern art museum, Almus Rex. Media reviewers are calling it a world-class cultural destination, and I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But time is running out. Before we end today's show, I'd like to thank our guest, Helsinki University researcher Ville Veikko-Pulkka. Thank you very much, Ville.
Thank you for having me here.
Also want to thank APN's co-host this week, Denise Wall. Thank you, Denise.
You're very welcome, Mark.
And we'd also like to thank our dear audience. You can keep in touch with us the rest of the week via our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts, and of course at yle.fi/news. This week's All Points North was produced by Zina Iovino, who also doubled as our reporter, and our audio engineer was Juha Jäntti. Thanks for joining us, and remember to tune in next week. So long for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.